December 6, 2023, it's a Walk for Pedro show.
I think the majority of musicians are interested in truth. You know, they got to be, because the thing, a musical thing, is a truth. If you play it, make a statement, a musical statement, and it's a valid statement, that's a truth right there in itself, you know. And if you play something phony, well, you know that's phony, you know. And, all musicians is striving for isn't set near perfection as they can get, and that's truth there, you know. And so, in order to play those kind of things, play truth, you got to live with as much truth as you possibly can, you know. And therefore, that religious, if a guy is religious, and I think we. He's searching for good. He wants to live a good life. He might call it religious, or he might not call himself religious. Maybe he says, I just live a good life. But a religious man would call him. He said, well, that man is a religious man. He lives a good life. So, quite a few musicians think about it. I'm sure we'll talk with quite a few of them.
Was a troupe of gypsy-like folk who trounced about their wooded cove. They played up a show for whomever would go, then pack up and away they did roll. The medieval knights and ladies in tights pranced their way through the village green. But if one tired of that, if it felt like old hat, 'twas a whole other sight to be seen. There were shores, to be sure, but they held such a lore. They were living the great elfin dream. You could hear all the cries of delight and of fun and of glee. 'Twas the merriest jovial robust band of elves that ever a one could to see. And they danced holding hands while they won over fans with their diminutive but oversized ways. And the people all gaped as they could not relate to the miniature underlays. There was Johnny and Corbin and Lucy Garlus and Jose Marcotti and Capone. The Lap Riot Jake and Fertility Deep and Salmonella Durbone. Not forget Portnoy or Gibby or Gaffney, Preeminent and Curly Octone. So many were they, several dozen they say, and the fair was the only life known. A pair of good friends, teeny tiny bookends are the focus of our mythical tale. Roger Dean and Fionn, the Castiglians, they bore the friendship, the holiest grail. And the things between the elves themselves were always pristine and serene. But the state of affairs at the Renaissance Fair was no good, 'cause the talls were so mean.
For Pedro show, happy Wednesday. Start off the show, John Coltrane telling August Bloom on June 15, 1958, that he thinks the majority of musicians are into the truth. Then we had the mentally regarded with Renaissance and Fair, which is first part of this huge piece, we're going to talk with Dave. Oh, yeah, I have to tell you, I'm not in man alone mode because of those software engineers from Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Dave from the Mentally Regarded here. Welcome aboard, Dave.
Thank you so much for having me, Watt. I appreciate it, man.
Now, tell me about this piece.
Well, so this is, I am currently in New Jersey right now, but I'm a filmmaker, I have two feature films to my credit, and I came out there to Los Angeles specifically to make my third feature, which was going to be a psychedelic horror movie, and on the way out there, financing fell apart. So I come out there, I'm fucking depressed, I'm trying to drown myself in variously between overeating and long distance running, and then my friend Joe, who I started the podcast Disguise Graffiti with, he calls me up one day. For whatever reason, I remember the exact circumstances of where I was, kind of like how people remember 11-22-63. And I remember Joe calling me and saying, hey, man, you want to make a rock opera? And because my friend Joe is a prodigy. He plays every single instrument, plays it well. He's a professional musician, does very, very well for himself, has been on every late-night talk show, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's got his own studio. He's got every instrument. I said, how about a triple album rock opera about an elfin journey that's influenced by some of the Roger Dean Yes stuff, like Topographic Oceans, but without the bloat, just with a story that doesn't fucking fall apart like every rock opera. By side two, they say, fuck the concept. Let's just do a bunch of tunes. But the idea was stick with it. So like, you know, like a liturgically influenced children's movies from the early 70s, like Yellow Submarine and The Point, to do something like that, that harkened back to when we trusted kids' psyches with these fucked up, trippy images, like Sid and Marty Krofft.
That the kind Point, of. You're talking about, I think Harry Nilsson made that for his son.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea behind this was pretty simple. It's one of those records. It's a triple album, and only two albums are finished. It's not commercially available yet. It's going to go up on patreon.com/discograffiti on February 14th, on Valentine's Day. I'm going to do an episode on Discograffiti about it. But these songs were, you know, the funniest thing about this project is that when I tell people about it, they look at me like, oh, you poor thing, you've been wasting your time fucking around with a Tascam 4-track. But the funny thing about it is it's so fucking produced that when people hear it, the look on their face, it melts from, the sympathy look to, like, jaw agape kind of thing, whether or not you like it.
Now, with the concept record, you kind of need a concept.
Yeah.
And well, what is it?
Okay, so here's what I did to make sure the concept carried through. First thing I did, because I'm a filmmaker, I created the entire plot. Then I broke it all up into pieces. The pieces became the songs. I figured out the sides where it would work, and there'd be a symmetry. And then each song, depending on what was going on in the narrative, Joe and I would work backwards and figure out what genre would best represent it, which is why the first fucking three songs are a Renaissance fair ballad into a fucking metal song into a torch song. It's all over the place. It's a genre.
For me, it ain't all over the place because music's music. Fuck that genre shit. We talked about this in your
show. You understand that. Yeah, you
get
it.
Right. It's a device, right, to tell you a story. But that's what I want to know. What is the bottom line of the concept that's underneath that stayed consistent? Well, you got two records, right? A third one's going to come.
Yeah, so, and this is unique, I think, because the double album is coming out. The double album is finished, but it was always intended to be a triple. And when the double comes out, if there's enough interest, or actually regardless, we're gonna throw up a Kickstarter and try to crowdfund the third record. Because, okay, so let me explain the concept before I get to the third record. Basically, it is a... hold on, let me actually get to this thing here. I'm going to, like, refer back to the liner notes here. So the album, it's basically focuses on a friendship, okay? So, and they're elves. Everybody is elves. They don't call each other elves. They call each other smalls. And then what? You and I are talls, okay? So the album focuses on a group of two lifelong elfin friends, and a whole bunch of elves that work at a Renaissance fair. This is where they're employed, and they're treated like fucking shit. Squalid conditions, just garbage. First song is called Renaissance Unfair. There you go. And then so, you know, they rally together with the rest of the elves to strike. They throw a strike for better treatment, and they're laughed out of the place derisively. So totally dejected, inspired to seek a better life, they've heard about this mythical land called Elfarmony, and they shove off in the dead of night to search for this mythical land. They don't even know if it exists, but they're just hoping, you know, wishing upon a star that it does. And smalls in this world, everything's flipped. They're seen as gods, and the talls are like slaves to them. So the six LP sides detail their various psychedelic misadventures on the way to their destination, including a detour into the land of the captive sun. And the whole thing is centered around a falling out between the two friends. So there's Raja Dean, which of course is based on Roger Dean. Raja Dean is the main character and the leader. And then Fjorn. So Fjorn splits from the pack of elves to become a dark overlord and besets them with all kinds of hardships at every turn. And then the third album that has not been worked on yet is unique in the annals of music history, I believe, in that the first side has 10 two-minute songs, and the second side has one 20-minute song.
Whoa. So now this first part we played, Renaissance Unfair.
Yeah.
Was it composed first? Did you do this thing sequentially?
We've worked on the whole thing sequentially. It started in 2008, so for the last 15 years, most of the 15 years, to be fair, it was all the bullshit of life getting in the way. You know, family, getting married, I'm just kidding. Life kind of happened, got in the way, and work petered out on it after two records. But we've been doing it sequentially, and the way that our partnership works is, even though it sounds like there's 1,000 people on there, every instrument is Joe, every single instrument. I don't play on it because it's pointless. He's so proficient at everything. But I sing on half of it. I co-wrote every song, and I wrote all the lyrics and the plot.
Now, Manly Regarded, that's the name of the proj, right? Or the troupe, or you and Joe.
That's our band name.
Okay. And this first part, Renaissance Unfair, that's kind of like you described the plot. It's a situation that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Just, and Rise Up is like they're going to do something about it, right?
That's
the second part. That's what I want to play that right now. Second part.
Please.
It's time to run! yourself an uprising. This should be good.
What in heaven's name could they possibly want?
Better treatment? Who knows? And frankly, who cares?
Better treatment? For Christ's sake, they should be grateful we don't keep them locked up in cages.
Dolls hear our demands, so we can carry on. And maybe live together without Armageddon. It'd be great if you could check this out. Please hear our decree. And reinstate our elf and pride, or we could maybe flee.
The sun will shine through our back door one day. The sun. Thank you.
come you don't take us seriously. You point and laugh, then turn your backs. And we stand here, our heads hanging down, wishing we could take the whole thing back. We did our best to be recognized, but it didn't work, at least we tried. You owe yourself at least that much before you go and die inside. Strike one, it's when you stood up to the fire inside. But your clock struck two, and then you struck out, and your spirit died. We'll sing and dance meant to do. After all, we make dolls happy, pretending we don't have a clue. And the contempt that they heap on us reassures us they really care. After all, they're attention, the alternative's too much to bear. Strike one, it's when you stood up to the fire inside. But your clock struck two, then you struck out, and your spirit. Sweet home where we grew up, it's not much, but it's what we know. And if we were to leave here, is there a place where only elves can go?
Watt for Pedro Show, that chunk of music, start off part two. Nelly Regarded, Rise Up. What's the whole piece called?
The whole piece is called Elf Harmony.
Elf Harmony, people.
Is obviously like Elf Harmony, but, you know, a very slight twist on that. And it's a mythical land.
Right. It's the place they're headed for. What they want to get out of that fucking bullshit and live a better life in Elf Harmony. Okay, yeah, exactly. This is Rise
just
Up.
After that, object that it exists.
Yeah, okay. After that was L7, not the number one people, but the one with the letters. This had Larissa on guitar, Ann Arbor. She had a band with John called Laughing Hyenas. This was before that. It's dearly missed. Nelly Regarded after that. Now, this is part three. This is Strikeout.
This one I'm super proud of. Rise Up and Strike Out are both me singing, but the plaintive vocal kind of effect on Strike Out is, it was a fucked up time in my life. I was pretty depressed, and I think it comes out, even though sometimes if you can inhabit something as dumb and offhanded as, you know, a narrative about an elf, you can really inhabit it with emotional honesty because it's so different from your own fucking, from your own stupid shit.
Yep. Okay. And then MSSV with Pillow Talk. And then part four, Nelly Regarded. Elf Harmony. What do you call it? The title song, huh?
Yeah.
Elf Harmony. It's almost like Espanol.
Exactly. Yeah, and we call it the sausage grinder. So we would think, like, what's the leap-off point here? And then try to change it. And for this one, it was a Vince Guaraldi Peanuts thing.
Ah, okay. Lorraine Lucier, after that, with Trans Disfigures Waltz, number three. And finally, part five of Elf Harmony. Into the Inky Black Night, Nelly Regarded. So, what about this part? Is this when they said this is when they sally forth?
This is exactly what that is. This is where they sally forth, and this is it's kind of a psychedelic quasi-instrumental, really fucking creepy, and there's theremin on it.
Now, you say you wrote all the words.
Yeah.
Now, would you present, like, when each part came up, like, for example, this fifth part, Into the Inky Black Night. Did you give him the words and, hey, imagine this with sounds. You want to bring some theremin? Or what? Tell me. I wasn't there.
Because basically from the outset, we knew what the whole thing was going to be. Because the plot.
Of course. But how was it going to be manifested? That's what I meant.
Slice it up into pieces, almost like note cards for a movie. And then each note card or what have you, you work backwards from song genre, and you figure out a way to unlock the key to that, you know, the emotional life of the song, as you know way better than me.
You mean, before you gave them lyrics, you gave them a description of this part?
Yeah, and sometimes, you know what we would do, Juan, in the interest of honesty, Strikeout was, we took a song that gave us a similar emotional effect, we changed the chords, but we kept the vibe and used that as the foundation. And then once we had built on top of it, we pulled out the foundation and changed that all around.
Well, I love the ambiguity of a title like that because they want to go, you know, fuck this place, this labor situation, a horrible strike. But it also means, you know, an endeavor, sally forth.
Yeah.
It's great play on words. So did some of these parts, like, begin with a title? And then you body, like, I'm curious between you and Joe with the instruments and you with the spiel.
Yeah.
Which informed which?
This is the fucking process. Greatest about it. Before we even sat down to write anything, in 2008, when I came to him, all the song titles were there. And descriptions of each song and what the lyrical focus would be.
Okay. Like the gist, right? They were not actually fleshed out yet. So in a way, because you're a filmmaking kind of tradition, a storyboard, right?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's why it was so easy to do it. And so that's how I was able to ensure that it wasn't like, you know, Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, where it's like the first side.
Oh, yeah, that's Small Faces.
Small Faces. And then by the B-side, they're like, we can't extend this concept. Same with, you know, this is like a hysterical but repeating tradition of rock history where they give up the concept.
Right.
But I wanted to safeguard against that, you know, I'm not making show tunes here, but I just wanted to make sure that it's intended eventual state is a children's animated cartoon, whether or not it ever gets there. But to ensure its possible eventual arrival in that state, it would have to be a cohesive storyline.
And did Joe make demos for you?
No.
No, whatever Joe came up with, that's what you went with.
I'm telling you, when I say Joe's a prodigy, it's just pointless to do demos.
I was just curious, because remember, I wasn't there, so I'm just curious, especially on the process.
We would write in the studio, because it's not a rented studio. We weren't running down studio hours.
Right.
So, and then as a natural outgrowth of Elf Harmony, that's when... You know, Joe and I, you know, we kind of, because of family stuff, kind of halted work on the project and, you know, always looking for an excuse to hang out. And sometimes you need a project when you got, you know, two guys who both have little kids. You got to, like, legitimize getting together. So we switched projects, you know. I mean, we just switched to Disco Graffiti and doing a discography trawls of all the great bands that have mattered, including your own, you know, so many of all of your projects have that kind of, you know, heft to them. But you and I covered the Minutemen, and it's going to be showing three sequential weeks in December, starting this Friday. I cannot wait. And everyone, all of the Disco Graffiti fans have been just hammering me, asking me when the fuck is the series going to be ready already. So, everyone's really excited about it.
Well, that's righteous. Okay, back to the Mentally Regarded. So you never left a part just hanging there when, like, reality called the little kids or something. Like Into the Inky Black Night, until you put it to bed. Or did you? I understand the whole piece had to be started and stopped at different points, but inside of each part.
Yeah.
Did you take it to where it could, or is it like, hey, this is as far as we can go with it, hold on?
Do me a favor, rephrase the question. I think I know what you're getting at, but I just want to make sure.
Yeah, but it seems like, okay, if I can call, I'm going to use some analogy here. If I can call the whole Elf Harmony, a solar system, and each part like a planet. They were a planet at a time, or were they like mouthfuls of planets?
That's a good, man, talk about a brilliant rephrasing. I now understand entirely what you're saying. So it's both. I wanted to make sure that there was you and I spoke about this. You know, there's the genre signifiers are all tired. You know, music is music, and you and I are definitely on the same page about it. But one thing that was so much fun about it was getting an almost synesthetic snapshot of what genre home each piece would live in, because then the song, it was almost like it was done before we started writing it, because the vibe was so thick before we even sat down.
Okay. Okay, and since it is a journey, you know, you can't stand in the same lake twice, right? Or river.
Right, yeah.
Heraclitus enlightened us to that fact. Okay, so Into the Blacking Night. I mean, this is when, you know, they cut rope, right, on the whole fucking old days.
Yeah. So Inky Black Night, they're out. And then Afraid of the Dark. You know, it's too late to turn back, basically.
And in fact, maybe like kind of an Orpheus trip, you know, if you do look back, you're going to fuck it up. You got to keep on keeping on.
It's like that thing, you know, I don't even know what fucking movie I'm quoting, but, you know, you walk through the door, you shut the door, and then the door disappears behind you, and you're in a different world.
Maybe Beyond the Looking Glass with Alice and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the movie, they mixed up the two books. They kind of made them into one. You know, same thing with The Wizard of Oz. Well, he had like 13 books or something. Mr. Bond.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the Narnia thing. There's this, there's definitely a sense of, but except for the Narnia thing, which I didn't realize, because as a kid I'm reading this stuff. I'm a voracious reader. But there's all these hidden Christian underpinnings. And, you know, I couldn't care less about shit like that. So, but there's no
religion. You're a guy who works with movie stuff and then also have your feet in the music world. And you know there's going to, so, when you go between the two, something's got to give, right?
Yeah, well, to me, there's always been a back and forth. It's always been my brain.
Well, you know, the more commonplace is probably books being turned into movies. But, like, songs being turned into movies, yeah, that's what you're doing here.
That's what would be great. I don't want to take on the burden of making the film myself.
But they're never going to be the same anyway, right? Because they're just two different art forms.
Right. Right, but, you know, I'm assuming that they would use the actual music itself. But, you know, look, if I could get it to that point.
Like just, fucking the Sand Pebbles, the way Hollywood changed that ending, man. If you know the book, you know, it'll just break your heart. Even if you, you know, Steve McQueen in a sailor suit, love it.
You're a huge right? You
it. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, December 6, 2023, edition of the Pedro Show. Special guest, Dave from the Mentally Regarded.
David, I want to wish you a happy Altamont Day.
Okay. Big love. December 6, 2023 is the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show. Watch for Pedro show. Start off the second hour, mentally regarded, afraid of the dark, right? The next part, what is that, part six. We become the monsters we fear the most. First movement.
Yeah.
Which is Ed Wein's Terror-Strewn Ordeal Orchestra. This is from a benefit Randolph and Graham put out for the situation in Gaza.
Yeah.
After that, mentally regarded with part seven of the Affarmony. This is Roger Dean, one of the main characters. And we had Noy Circa with Every Day.
Patterned after Roger Umbrella.
And the next one, part eight, mentally regarded. Hell hath no fury like a fjorn scorn. A little Shakespeare there. a little shrewy. Verona, right? I think three of his plays from Verona. Okay, so let's first do Afraid of the Dark.
Let's do it. This is Afraid of the
Dark. They're on their mission now. There's no turning back, right?
Yeah, and I really, really like how this song came out. There's a late night paranoia to it, and the marimbas on it, Joe plays wonderfully.
Yeah.
I love that he and I both sing together. You have to understand that when I'm talking about it, I'm not talking about it from a place of ego, that whenever I have recorded anything on my own, it's always traditionally been a four-track thing, so it is a bedroom production. But to hear what Joe has done with it and how he's been able to elevate it, it makes me just as much a fan as a participant.
God bless Joe. Where does he live?
And, you know, whichever
Where does
way,
Joe live?
What's that?
Where's Joe live?
Joe's out there. Joe has...
California.
Yeah, he's out there. He works all over the fucking place. He does soundtrack
work. Well, it's a big state. Is he in SoCal?
Yeah, he's in Long Beach.
Oh, Strong Beach. All right. Almost a neighbor. Fuck. Now, tell me about this tune that's kind of based on one of the characters, Roger Dean.
Roger Dean is awesome. There's a Morricone-type feel to this one.
Sure.
There's Trump. There's a marching sensation to it.
Mr. Marconi was a trumpet player.
Yeah. And then there's a callback to the, I don't know if you're familiar with Scott Walker's solo work from the Walker brothers, but
sure.
there's certain really, really rousing, almost like stampede of horses marching through kind of old Western style songs.
Yep.
And this is a callback to those, like We Came Through and Jackie. And this is just a, you know, the first two songs on the second side are tributes to the two main characters, the two friends who had the huge falling out.
Well, I guess that's what you mean by a fjorn scorned.
Yeah, exactly.
The cat's name is Fjorn, right?
Yeah, this one is really up your alley. This has got a hardness to it, and there's a BOC type of a deal to this one.
All right.
This one, I'm fucking shouting the lyrics from the top of my lungs.
Yeah. And he's angry.
Yeah. He's a fucking piece of shit.
It's not from a misunderstanding. You think this guy's got a little corruption inside his heart?
Very much so. I think, you know, this particular guy, it's not like Fjorn... It is not like he's got a glimmer of good spirit inside of him that was snuffed out by, you know, by a life of, you know, being wounded or life getting at him. I think this is just once he left the Renaissance Fair, you know, he'd been treated so shitty for so long and he didn't feel like, just yet more hardships, you know, just one after the other.
Collateral damage.
You know, as Jeff Conaway said before he overdosed and died, life is pain and pain is hell. And so I guess he just got sick of it and embraced the dark side because just like, you know, cocaine or anything that makes you feel invincible, it's a brief respite from you know, feeling the slog of, you know, the humdrum.
Right. And what about this? The manifold hazards of elfin freight train hopping.
So that is a
giant... don't give it away. We're going to go listen right now.
Oh, sorry, man.
Here we go.
together we play shell games, scams all the way. We'll coerce you to lay down a bed. Oh, coerce you to lay down a bed. Ordinary am I, but wallflower I ain't. Never once heard a lady complain. I lay down my thoughts and I'll show who's the boss. A ballooning reputation maintained. A ballooning reputation maintained.
Show. We continue. Tim Gabrone, the middly regarded Joe.
Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy. Yeah, thank you for that. And the fucking sojourn of fucking Roger Dean Fjorn.
Yeah.
That chunk started off the manifold hazards of Elfin Freight Train hopping.
This one's real special to me because it's a John Fahey-style American primitive acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I was thinking of Jim O'Rourke.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because he did that Bad Timing record, which has got a lot of those patterns on it.
Yeah, and he's a big acolyte of John Fahey.
Yeah, with good reason. I mean, I literally have everything John's ever done. I'm obsessed with his work.
Tom Watson, too, is a big fan, the guy I play with in the Missing Man.
Which stuff does he prefer, the later...
All of it. You know, it's like John Coltrane. There's different phases because a life is many chapters.
You know what I find interesting about his stuff is that my favorite of his stuff is the 60s stuff. And he discredits it all because apparently he had a traumatic childhood and he considers those records disposable fantasias that he wove to comfort and cocoon himself from that pain.
A lot of people say that, you know, they want to backtrack, but, you know, It came out, and there was a reason for it. And
exactly.
It's so vital. I couldn't see it being pretense.
Yeah, you know,
I think it was honest. That's where he was. Maybe later in his life, he wanted to take it back, but I'm glad it's all out there. Jad Fair and Samuel Lockward after that with Knocking. Then here's the eighth part. Mentally Regarded. Dave and Joe with Small Tales. Now, where are we with Small Tales?
That's actually the 10th song.
Oh, 10th song.
Small Tales is like an Irish jig. So at this point in the narrative, they're on a train, and they're kind of dancing a jig in the caboose, and, you know, drinking Ripple, and just this elfin dance party. And it's got like a chieftain's kind of feel to it.
Yep. You know about the jig, right?
No, tell
the jig, the tradition of the jig was, it's from theater.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like Everybody's Dead, Shakespeare tragedy, okay? They can't have people going home all sad. So all the players, you know, after the last scene and all the hell and whatever, dust settles, they get up there and they do this little fucking dance and cuss words and shit to get everybody fucking laughing and shit. So the jig should be at the end. Yeah, it was to cleanse the palate so nobody go home sad.
That's cool.
Now, you had to have a sad part, right, because they believe plays were about telling morals and teaching people and stuff. But they didn't want them going home sad, so it was a little palate cleanse.
That's, you know, that's why people expect that kind of a treatment.
Well, that's where the jig comes from, believe it or not. Post-Homo Hubris Jazz after that with a side eight excerpt. That's Randolph Graham. The Eugene Difficult Music Ensemble. The Mentally Regarded with part 11. Sorry for getting the fucking numbers wrong.
Oh, that's okay.
Forlorn Without Fjorn. Again, we name check number two. The cat who's got butt hurt. He wants fucking Roger Dean to pay for it.
You can't beat that word butthurt. You just can't. This is it says it right there in the title. It's really kind of like a last reprieve for his old friend before he just puts all of that nostalgic bullshit behind him and forges on. Because, you know, another bonus thing of knowing where you are in the narrative beforehand is that you can project and make these album side closures considered and self-conscious about where they are in the story, which is cool.
You know, Dante did this, you know, right? He starts writing in 1308, but he begins his play in 1300.
Especially
when he's got the fucking fortune tellers in hell. Yeah, he don't want to be one either. Yeah, this way you know what it is. It's just, you and Joe kind of used the Dante Alighieri device. Very wise, very wise. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. December 6, 2023 edition. Edition Walk from Pedro Show. Special guest, Dave Gabrillo. Hold tight for hour three. December 6, 2023. It's third hour of the Walk from Pedro Show.
Tumbled out. Dies out. Oh, blur the attack. Forget the neck with its back, and it'll paint it black. A shape that they used as a low for decor. Mark the souls of the idiots right to their core. Plucking from quivers of Jacodian lore. A land storm is unleashed full on javelin war.
For Pedro's show, start off the third hour, Mentally Regarded, with the Land of the Captive Sun. Then we had Brendan Eder, not Elder, not yet, he'll get there.
in some
Mister, before we go on, let us hip us to part 12 there, The Land of the Captive Son.
This is one of my favorite tunes on it. It's got the vibe on this one was supposed to be like Love Forever Changes. So there's a autumnal psychedelia.
You're talking about Arthur Lee.
Hell yeah.
I saw him redo that thing at the fucking House of Booze before they tore it down.
I saw him toward the end, and I was unfortunately responsible for one of the worst codas to a show, possibly the worst coda that I've ever seen. So I saw him at Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. It must have been 95.
Ramona.
Yeah, yeah. And he played for like 20 minutes with a band he had just met backstage prior to the show itself. And 20 minutes later, he says goodnight. And I didn't think about it. You're probably going to, you know, wag a finger at me, but I yelled out before I even considered what I was doing, I want my $5 back. He kind of stammered through an apology and put his guitar back on and then did the absolute worst fucking version of Hey Joe I've ever heard in my life, and it was about a half hour long.
Yeah, you know, me and Pettibone saw him, was that fucking place, the teaser of Crescent Heights. He didn't get one song out. Somebody gave him shrooms. The drummer got up through his sticks at him and ran out of the place, you know.
When was that? What year was that, would you say?
Yeah, in the 80s. It was sad. This is before he went to jail for shooting the gun in the backyard. Yeah. Look, No More Eyes.
Yes.
Mentally Regarded. Now, this is part 13. What's this about?
So this particular album side has three songs. It starts with The Land of the Captive Son, and then No More Eyes is the link. We always saw it as a link track.
Okay.
So it's like a
bridge.
Song. Yeah. It's 2 minutes, 44 seconds. It's not an insignificant song, but it's a Bowie-esque song melodically that takes you from the land of the Captive Son, which is, you know, a land that the elves actually find them in, and brings the whole thing to the center point of the entire record, which is the giant eyeball spaceship lights the way. That's 11 and a half minutes long and contains six Roman numeral parts.
Right. Now, Carter just shot off their new latest album, Come On Baby, and then, yeah, the giant eyeball spaceship lights the way. And this is the mega jam for the fucking piece.
Not of the entire record. The mega jam will be the very last song.
Of the first two-thirds.
Yeah, of the first two-thirds, this is the mega jam for sure.
Yeah. So, let's get to Skyboatin', right?
Yeah. Wait, but first, the giant eyeball spaceship. So, Roger Dean inspires in a rallying pep talk for all of the elves to pluck their eyeballs out so that they can build a giant eyeball spaceship that'll take them, so that they can move faster and they can fly through the sky. The problem is Fjorn catches wind of this, so to speak, and sends out a dust storm to get into the eye. And then there's this whole fucking sequence where Raja Dean is on the outside of the eyeball, fucking karate chopping all these javelins that Fjorn is sending out to poke the eyeball out. And it turns into what sounds like 8-bit video game music.
Some Game Boy.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, let's listen to Skyboat.
red line is high. It's such a pale invitation, especially at night. Health and brains need a vacation from stuff that causes fright. So they seek mind titillation. Now that we've fled, it's time for bed. But with no eyes to close, we lie awake instead, counting sheep till we turn gray. Huddled under sheets, little person congregation, toss and turn, rip, eat, till sunrise brings exhausting nation. At least there's no more night. That was a crap situation, but how to dig the light when suffering side alleviation. Now that we've fled, it's time for bed. With no eyes to close, we lie awake instead, counting sheep till we turn gray. Come back another day.
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. That chunk started off Mentally Regarded doing Skyboatin', which is the 15th part.
Something like that.
Yep, yeah. Fending off the fucking javelins. Ibrahim after them, off that benefit for the Gaza situation, Inspire. And then finally, 16th part, but people remember it's only two-thirds done, Mentally Regarded with Overkill. Overkill, that's not a happy...
So Overkill is the Men at Work song. Do you remember that song? Day after day it reappears.
Little wave.
It's a great song.
Okay.
It's literally the best song ever about insomnia. So this is the part of the story where they plucked all their eyeballs out. And the problem is, without eyeballs, how the fuck do you fall asleep? You need to be able to shut your eyes. How do you shut your eyes if there's no eyes to shut? It's a song about insomnia based on the fact that there's no eyeballs to close. So all it's Men at Work's Overkill, but slowed down to a funereal drone with a churchly organ and a disembodied, almost Sonic Boom Spaceman 3 kind of a vibe to it, and with completely changed lyrics.
Completely changed from what?
From Men at Work's version. This is Elves not being able to speak.
Of course you ain't going to fucking... You're going to, you know, build all this world up to lead to a Men at Work? Of course.
Exactly. I mean, talk about it at the climax.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think they ended up getting sued for the biggest hit. They never wrote it.
I actually kind of liked Men at Work. I didn't think they were that bad. Plus, Colin Hay remained a really, really prolific singer-songwriter who did a lot of work at Largo. He's one in that Largo scene.
No,
you know,
I didn't.
About
but that? I read something about Who Could It Be or whatever. He stole that song.
Yeah.
They had to pay the real songwriter. Anyway, about that. Now you kind of said if about this third record.
What do you mean?
Like it might not happen.
No, it's happening.
Okay.
It's just, look, you have a show, you know what goes into it, and you're the guy. I have no help whatsoever. I put up 4 shows a week, and my interviews take forever, as you know. You had a short one, so yours was 2.5 hours. Last night, I did an interview with Michelle Phillips about rating everything the Mamas and Papas ever did. We got 5 fucking hours into it and had to stop at September 1966. So to edit all this stuff, you know, like, where am I going to find time to, you know, make Elf music? So it's a tough thing, but we'll manage.
Well, it's been 15 years already.
Yeah, why stop?
Yeah, you know what I mean? And you like Mr. Wells learned us, no wine before it's time. I met him once, you know.
What I just learned today is that the first Beatle to do an ad was Ringo right before he went to rehab. So he was not thinking so clearly. And it was for fucking wine coolers in 1986.
Okay. And maybe it was that Masson Brothers, right? Two-Buck Chuck. Yeah. But, you know, he works hard for the money. I met him. He's a big man. I mean, not just wide, but tall. Yeah. Mr. Wells.
Oh,
it was at Pink's. He had a chili dog in each hand. I go, Mr. Wells. He goes, young man, I would shake your hand, but I am busy.
That's classic, man.
It was the early 80s. Something else. So, look, there's no rush for this third record, but you and Joe, you've made no headway. But you got it storyboarded out, right, so you know how this is going to resolve.
Yeah, like I said, the last record is, it's never been done, and that is 10 two-minute songs. And then the flip is 1 20-minute piece. I don't know. Like, if you think of Cam's...
So you only got 3 parts left, actually.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's fun to do. You know, when you get to be as old as me, you know, it's, you know, you just got to come up with a creative enough excuse to hang out with your good friends. I think that's valid. Yeah. It's just like, you know, a man and a woman or the sex of your choice, they have a kid as a project to keep the relationship alive. Well, friends, when they have projects and there's a clear understanding between the two, that can be, you know, a real tool. Plus, you get something out of it.
Look, I'm going to bring up a movie thing, even though I'm pretty lacking in that area. Alfred Hitchcock talked about this thing called the MacGuffin.
Oh, yeah.
Not important, really, but it is important as far as you get in a movie. But what the MacGuffin is, it don't really matter. So I think it's kind of related to something like that.
But the funny thing about that, and that's a perfect example, is that the MacGuffin, in this case, is this monumental, endless piece of work. It's, yes, it doesn't matter. You're totally right. It's just about hanging out with my good buddy Joe.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's such a monster, it's not just, you know, an EP or some shit. It's, you know, I mean, how many, can you name more than 10 triple albums?
I know the ELP one.
What's that?
There's a Brain Sound Surgery one. Peter Sinfield, no, I think, wrote the words.
That's a single.
No, it's a triple album.
Not that one, no. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that you've read. Triple.
Yeah, it's called Carnival 9.
I love that song, man.
Right, but the whole album was Brain Sound Surgery. The single was actually on the album. I had a buddy who was way into that band, so even though I don't know much about him, I kind of do because I love my friend.
Look, I'm the kind of guy that loves the Minutemen and ELP. It doesn't make sense. It shouldn't make sense, but it makes sense.
It's okay. When the third record comes out, I'm inviting you to come back on the show. We can play it, talk about it.
I would love that. That would be absolutely fucking genius.
Thank you so much. Beautiful. We got to keep on keeping on, MacGuffin or not. People, it's been the December 6th, 2023 edition of Wild Pedro. So keep your powder dry.